This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel. If you live in the Northwest, chances are you feel pretty good about how you cook your fish or make your coffee. But Dan Pashman thinks there's always room for improvement. Dan is the host of the WNYC podcast, The Sporkful, and his new book is called Eat More Better: How to Make Every Bite More Delicious. In some cases, making every bite more delicious means changing a time-honored tradition, like not using a graham cracker to hold a s'more together.
I love s'mores in theory, but they are structurally problematic. And I think it's interesting the way you suggested that part of the s'mores experience is that the s'more falls apart when you bite into it.
Right.
Well, but to me, it's like, well, then let's make a better s'more that can get us those flavors and textures without something that falls apart before it's even halfway eaten. So one option is use soft cookies or crackers instead of hard graham crackers. If you don't want to lose the graham flavor, put it in a little mini graham cracker pie crust, miniature serving size, or make a whole big s'mores pie with a graham cracker crust. There are different ways to get those flavors and textures together. And, you know, I'm not going to let tradition stand in the way of a better eating experience.
Fair enough. So as you've looked at the best way to try and eat different kinds of foods, what surprised you the most?
You know, when I first started working on the Sporkful podcast and on this book, I thought of the whole exercise as sort of an exercise in absurdity. Like, I'm going to talk about all these really simple foods in ridiculous detail, and it will just be ridiculous. And one of the common reactions that I've gotten from people, which I find interesting and kind of cool, is that people say, I never knew I cared so much about that. And it's funny because I've had the same realization about myself, that I set out to do this thing that I thought was sort of satirical, and in the end, it ended up being more earnest. It's still a little silly and absurd, but I actually do really care that much about making s'mores better. And there's actually, it turns out, a fair number of people who also do, you know, or who just have a strong opinion the other way, like you, Jeannie. But, like, it's exciting to me that people have these strong opinions, oftentimes about things that are so mundane they never thought to have an opinion about them before. But then when provoked, they actually, like, fly into a rage over s'mores.
I'm not upset about the idea of s'mores. I just was curious about that.
I know. I'm not suggesting you were.
Dan Pashman is the author of the book Eat More Better, which is a study, a pretty fun study of how to make and eat your food in the best way possible. He's also the host of the podcast The Sporkful, which comes out of WNYC. So are you sitting down? I'm going to tell you something that might surprise you.
I am sitting down. I'm ready.
Oh, good, good. Okay. So here in Seattle, we enjoy salmon a great deal. We tend to eat salmon a lot. I know.
I did not know about that.
I know. I'm so glad.
No, I'm just kidding. I knew about that. But I'm so excited to be in Seattle because I'm going to eat myself some salmon all over the place.
Okay. Well, so I have to ask you about when you investigated cooking salmon in a dishwasher. Why did you do that? Why did you investigate cooking salmon in the dishwasher?
Well, dishwasher cooking is something that has been around for a while, and salmon is like the number one food people cook in a dishwasher. And I was curious to find out.
Wait,
yes?
Salmon is the number one food people cook in a dishwasher? I'm having a hard time with that. That just seems...
Yes, like if you Google just dishwasher cooking, you will see more stuff come up about dishwasher salmon than any other food. And it kind of makes sense because when you cook something in a dishwasher, what you're essentially doing is kind of poaching it. You're cooking it in hot water. And, you know, the poached salmon is delicious. It's a great way to cook salmon. And salmon lends itself very nicely to dishwasher cooking. So I wanted to find out what other foods might be cooked in a dishwasher and also to test the salmon thing myself.
Yeah.
So I cooked all kinds of different stuff. I did eggs and rice and meat and scallops and poached pears. My basic takeaway was that dishwasher cooking is a fun party trick, and if you practice it a little bit, you can get the hang of it, and it works perfectly well for certain foods. I don't know that salmon from a dishwasher is better than the other ways you might cook it, but it's certainly just as good, and it's kind of fun. Like, imagine you have people over at your house. They arrive. You get a sink full of dirty dishes, and everyone's like, Jeannie, where's dinner? You invited us over for dinner. And you're like, watch this. You load all the plates into the dishwasher, wrap some salmon in foil. It needs to be airtight, very tightly sealed. throw it in the dishwasher, run the dishwasher, serve some drinks, open up the dishwasher, clean plates come out, set the table, dinner's ready. People are going to remember that dinner.
They're going to remember the preparation maybe more than how the actual food turned out.
So it's a fun party trick. I don't know that it actually cooks food any better than the other methods. But, you know, I'm glad I did it once.
Okay. Well, so what do you think is the best way to prepare salmon? And then what's the best way to eat salmon?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big question. And, you know, in the book, I sort of say there's some issues where I'm going to tell you this is the right way, this is the wrong way. And there's other issues where I'm going to say it's really a matter of taste. Whatever you prefer is cool with me. I just want you to understand the factors at play so you can make an informed decision. So I'm not going to say this is the best way to eat salmon because different people are going to like different things. You know, in the book, I try not to legislate matters of personal preference. I cite the Latin maxim, de gustibus non est disputandum. In matters of taste, there can be no dispute. And so I love smoked salmon. I love salmon sashimi. I love crispy fried salmon skin. And what I love about salmon in general is the flavor. I love its level of fattiness, and I love the skin. And I love how it is so good in so many different ways. There's actually a recipe in the book for a dish I call omega 3 to the third. It's in the math chapter when I talk about exponential cooking. And omega 3 to the third is grilled salmon with smoked salmon with crispy salmon skin. And you put all those together in one bite, so you get the salty chewiness of the smoked salmon, you get the density and the tenderness of the grilled salmon, and then you get that crisp from the salmon skin. And it is, I mean, that, you want my salmon dish, Jeannie, that's it right there, omega 3 to the third.
Wow. That's a commitment. That's a salmon commitment of
that's
a dish right,
right
there.
That's right, Seattle. I am committed to salmon.
Well, our producer, Amina Al-Sadi, also, she found out that you think sushi could be a good breakfast food. I'm very curious about that.
Yeah, this is in the philosophy chapter of the book, which I should say the book is based on the premise that a bite is a precious resource, and you only get so many bites in life. You want to make everyone as delicious as possible. And the book is a tongue-in-cheek textbook that will teach you to do that. And so in the philosophy chapter, I talk a lot about breaking down societal constructs. We use a sort of Socratic method in that part of the book to question underlying assumptions. And one of the underlying assumptions that I think holds back the pursuit of deliciousness is these sort of false categorizations of what is breakfast food, what is lunch or dinner food. You know, like you would not probably start the day with a slice of cake, but you would have a muffin or a Danish. There's not much of a difference. And certainly in a lot of the breakfast cereals or instant oatmeals on the market, you're getting just as much sugar as you would in a good slice of cake. Like eggs. Eggs are delicious for dinner. Peanut butter and jelly is a 24/7 food. And sushi is delicious in the morning. Now, sashimi even more so, because what doesn't hold up so well in the fridge is the rice. Mm-hmm. But why wouldn't you like to have fish in the morning? I mean, it's full of protein. It's going to fill you up. It's going to energize you without weighing you down. It's the kind of thing that you can, you know, you order a sashimi dinner the night before, you take home the leftovers, next morning grab that extra sashimi in the container, bring it to work. It's convenient. It's delicious. I mean, that's a great breakfast.
Do you eat sushi for breakfast or sashimi for breakfast?
I do. I do. In fact, I'm fixing to do it right now. We're talking about it. I do. I mean, more often sashimi, because as I said, the rice is what doesn't hold up so well in the fridge. But I absolutely will do this. No question. You want to take it out of the fridge and let it come to room temperature. It will be better that way. But once it's come to room temperature, eat away.
I'm talking with Dan Pashman. He's the host and producer of the podcast The Sporkful out of WNYC. He's also the author of the book Eat More Better, which is, as he just described, a kind of textbook looking at how to eat things in the best way possible. Now, we just talked about salmon, a sort of iconic Seattle food, but Seattle also has a strong attachment to coffee, which you may not have known. I just keep surprising you with things about this town.
Yeah, I know. Are you guys also into grunge rock?
Wow, you really know us. Impressive.
I know. Yeah.
We like flannel.
I must have dated Seattle back in about 1994.
The entire country did. That's the love story.
I know, right? Yeah, I remember that. It was a whirlwind romance.
It really was. It was gorgeous. Well, I have to ask you about coffee, particularly the best way to prepare it, because people feel pretty strongly about how they make their coffee and which way is the best way to make it. So what do you think the best way to make coffee is?
Well, I'll say a couple things. In terms of coffee generally, I mean, drink what you like. If it tastes good to you, that's probably good coffee for you. Like, don't get hung up on what it costs or whether it comes from which mountain in the Himalayas and if that mountain is going to taste better than the other mountain. I think that the most important thing when you're making coffee is actually the simplest thing, which is the ratio between coffee and water. That is the most important thing. And the next most important thing is the temperature of the water. You don't want the water too hot or it brings out the bitterness in the coffee. If you get those things right, then most quality coffee grounds are going to taste good. Now, one of the things I talk about in the book that's a real passion of mine is iced coffee. I don't know how you feel about that, Jeannie. Is that my unsafe ground in Seattle, talking iced coffee?
You're on fairly safe ground, yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
So I love iced coffee most months of the year. I find it very refreshing. But I do feel like there's a real issue with any iced beverage, which is dilution. The ice melts and the coffee gets diluted. Has this happened to you? Does it upset you?
Yes, yes. As you mentioned iced coffee, I was thinking, but you just don't get the same kick out of it at the end. So I'm glad you brought that up.
That's right. So a couple of things I'll say. A really good iced coffee purveyor will make extra strong coffee for iced coffee. They make a separate brew for iced coffee so that as the ice melts, it accounts for the dilution. They'll also keep that iced coffee stored in a fridge cold so that the ice doesn't melt as quickly when you pour the coffee over it. Ideally, they'll also use ice with a very low surface area to volume ratio so that less of the ice surface area is exposed to the warmer liquid and therefore the ice will melt slower. If they want to be super hardcore, they'll make their ice cubes out of coffee.
Whoa.
And that's the piece of resistance right there, because then the ice melts, but the coffee does not weaken at all.
Wow. You just blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, I don't know if this annoys you, but I get very annoyed when people say iced coffee instead of iced coffee. You know, like that. I won't even buy it at a place if they can't. Come on, people. Iced coffee. But I do believe that if you make your coffee with coffee ice cubes, then you can rightly call it ice coffee. Because when you add regular ice to coffee, you're icing the coffee. So then it is iced coffee. But if you're just having coffee that has been turned to ice with more coffee poured on top of it, then you can call that ice coffee. And, you know, that's clearly the drink for grammar snobs.
I have never had iced or ice coffee with actual coffee ice cubes in it. Have you had this before, or is this just sort of theoretical? Man.
I have had it, and it is really delicious. But you don't have to go to that length to have good iced coffee. Just make the coffee a little extra strong. You're right that the ice will dilute it, but if the coffee is stored cold, and if you've got good ice, and if you've got strong coffee, it won't dilute too much. And I don't mind a little dilution as you go through the beverage. I like my coffee experience to kind of like shoot me into the sky and then parachute me back to earth. And so, you know, start off strong and then kind of ride the buzz, coast on home.
Well, I'm like you. I enjoy having a coffee experience where I'm sort of parachuted into the sky and then brought back down. But I have to say the best way to drink coffee, whether it's hot or cold, is with a splash of half and half. And that's like objectively the best way to drink coffee, correct?
I mean, you talk extensively about the nature of objective truth as it pertains to coffee. There's also a Socratic dialogue in the book about the ethics of cherry picking specific ingredients out of a snack mix. I personally, to my taste, find half and half a little too rich.
Ooh.
I'll be honest.
Okay. That's fair.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
It's funny. Every time I hear about half and half, I always think of my grandmother. When I was growing up, she would eat total with half and half, and she would share some with me, and I would be like, why does this taste so good? Like, I didn't understand what half and half was as a kid. And actually, like, recently, I had half and half in the fridge when we had run out of milk, and I had cereal with half and half, and that was amazing.
All right. Well, I'm glad to know that there are some good uses for half and half, even though it may not be best with coffee. But I also know that you have experimented with putting a different kind of fat in coffee and in tea. You've put butter in coffee and in tea. Is that right? Why did you do that?
I mean, we did some experiments with this at the Sporkful, at Sporkful headquarters. And, I mean, butter in coffee is a thing right now. It happens to be very of the moment in the Silicon Valley circles in which I don't travel. But people kept asking me, what's the deal with butter in the coffee? So I said, okay, all right. So it's not as crazy as it sounds. I mean, you just said put half and half in your coffee. I mean, half and half and butter are like kissing cousins. Okay, so it's not totally outrageous. But the logic behind it is that butter has fat, obviously, and it adds richness to the coffee, but also the fat fills you up. So butter and coffee is meant to be a breakfast replacement. Some people also add coconut oil or some other kind of oil, so you have two different types of fat in the coffee, one of which your body burns faster than the other, so it kind of, part of it, you get the caffeine and the quick burn fat right away, and then you have the slow burn fat to keep you full until lunch. But all that being said, I'd probably still prefer my butter outside my coffee. But the idea of putting butter into a hot beverage has a long and proud history. In fact, Himalayan tea has had butter in it for many, many generations and probably centuries. They use yak butter, and that sounds delicious to me. And I mean, hot buttered rum is a thing that's also nice to drink. And so I don't think the idea of putting butter into your beverages should sound so outlandish.
What got you on this path in the first place? You host a blog called The Sporkful. You wrote Eat More Better, and all of it is about exploring the best ways to cook, the best ways to eat, the best way to have a good relationship with food. Why did you start looking into this in the first place?
Well, my background before I got into this was in news radio, actually, like you, and I worked on a number of shows that kept getting canceled. And I kept getting laid off, and friends of mine were starting podcasts, and I thought that if I start my own podcast, at least that way, the only one who can cancel it is me. And so I started as a side project, and I had never done anything in food before, but I always loved to eat. I was someone who was kind of obsessive about eating, who had a lot of theories and opinions, strong opinions about food and eating. And I had this idea of doing a podcast, you know, which is what The Sporkful became, a podcast where I would just talk about the most basic foods in the most ridiculous detail. And our motto is, it's not for foodies, it's for eaters. And that sort of set us on the road. And over time, managed to connect with other people who turned out to be just as weird and twisted and eating obsessed as I am.